Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue with our ongoing series of emerging markets conversations, though specifically focusing in today on China. With that, joining me for the conversation today, glad to welcome back Jingchen Yu, emerging market strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jingchen, thank you for dropping by. I know we have some timely developments surrounding China to inform our listeners and clients on. So looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you so much, Dan. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. So Jingchen, I know you actually recently just came back from a trip to China and you did write a blog about your experience. To begin, can you tell us a bit about what you had observed while you were over in China?
Absolutely. Thank you again, Dan. I still remember we were talking about Japan last time in the studio before I went to China. I'm glad that we can spend some time together today discussing another important market in Asia, which is China. Indeed, for me, it was a memorable trip to begin with, right? As I said in the blog, I visited a variety of places in China this time, from big metropolitan cities to small towns near China's border with Myanmar. If you are interested in knowing more about my trip, please take a look at my blog. But in essence, it was a trip through contrast. I got a chance to experience China's world-class infrastructure and the fascinating efficiency of its digital economy. I was also able to observe the country's commitment to a low-carbon lifestyle that is quite well integrated into people's lives. Also, interestingly, it was encouraging to see more foreign visitors, right, presence, and therefore rising interest in China again, something we had not seen since the pandemic. But the challenges that were often portrayed, in the media were also present in reality. Consumer demand is quite weak. And you can, see evidence of overinvestment. The housing market is still in trouble, as you can sort of observe just from people's conversations, or from the vacancy rate in different places as well. And some of the structural challenges, including low birth rate, or at least the trend, which based on our conversation with friends, is indeed quite common perception. So again, you are, very much welcome to take a read at the blog, but the trip indeed stimulated a lot of reflections, which remind me that understanding China today has to recognize both of its remarkable progress and the significant challenges that lie ahead.
Well, Jingchen, it sounds like it was a fascinating visit and very interesting to hear about some boots on the ground observations. To your point, I will direct our listeners to your blog, Reflections on My Second Trip to Mainland China Post-Pandemic, which is now available up on ubs.com/CIO. Though, Jingchen, it's interesting, since your return, it does appear that the policymakers are getting more nervous and therefore more serious about the economy in China. Now, according to the headline news, there seems to have been some major stimulus packages rolled out from China to shore up its economy. So can you take a few moments to tell us what they have announced?
As you highlighted, Dan, China has been facing with both cyclical and structural challenges since the reopening boost fell short back in early 2023. And as I just mentioned at various, micro levels. Policymakers recently announced an outsized set of stimulus package to shore up its economy in an unusual press briefing setting. In a nutshell, on the monetary policy front, the People's Bank of China, or the PBOC, announced several rate cuts initiatives, including the reserve requirement ratio cut starting with 50 basis points soon and 20 basis point cut over the 7-day open market operations reverse repo rate and 20 to 25 bips cut to the LPR and deposit rate and 30 basis point cut to the 1-year MLF rate and then a another 50 basis point cut to the existing mortgage rate, among others. And to address the property-related weakness, the minimum down payment ratio for second home was also lowered to 15% from 25%. And now the 300 billion RMB relending facility that announced early this year in May is allowed to support 100% of the principal of eligible loans. It used to be 60%, right? That was designed to be used by local SOEs to destock home inventory. Last but not least, sort of explicit support on the stock market was also announced with the introduction of 500 billion RMB swap facility for financial institutions to use from the central bank to buy stocks, and a 300 billion RMB, relending facility for banks to support listed companies and major shareholders to buy back shares and raise holding.
So, Jing Chen, with that, can you spend a few moments sharing with us some of the economic implications from this stimulus package? Are they able to really move the needle here?
Sure. To begin with, what has been announced so far was indeed a positive surprise because it covered multiple areas from monetary to property and capital markets. Importantly, it means policymakers acknowledge, right, the growing urgency to turbocharge the weak economic activity in China. To analyze whether this package can really move the needle, of course, the interest rate reductions across the board help will definitely certainly help lower households, lower income households and enterprises, to lower their, burden, right, in a way to boost consumption growth. But the key is really to look at how and whether the housing market crisis can be effectively treated. In my view, more needs to be done. These measures so far could marginally, at least lift market sentiment. But when we think about the slow progress of the previously announced package, right? For instance, if you look at the 300 billion RMB relending facility that I mentioned for the destocking efforts, only a small portion of it, or around 12 billion of it, were only being used. So progress has been slow. And more broadly, to secure a sustained recovery, fiscal policy should do much more heavy lifting and play a bigger role in our view. So strong fiscal stimulus is likely to follow to cushion the weak demand, likely in the forms of more aggressive government bond issuance and or more spending on affordable housing, elderly care, etc. As we saw overnight, President Xi hosted a September political meeting, which is about the economy. Rarely happened in history for the September political meeting focused on economy, right? And the signal was quite upfront in terms of boosting growth and the economy, therefore, and specifically rescuing the property market. So in that sense, we are closely watching any incoming detailed fiscal policies, which would be key to address both cyclical and the structural headwinds that China has been and will be facing.
So now that we have a better understanding of the economic implications, before we close out, Jing Chen, I have to ask about the investment implications behind all of this. What might those consist of in your view?
I think the announced package could serve as a policy put on the economy, reverse over some bearish investment views as well, so lift market sentiment in the very near term, as we have been seeing. Especially of note is the liquidity to support or in a way encourage the appreciation of the domestic stock market is really something that we have rarely seen in the past, which again could serve as a strong near-term catalyst. But we think the economic fundamentals need to turn around, right, to validate any sustainable upside right now, we are still awaiting more policy evidence to materialize. As I mentioned before, more could be coming, but execution, the timing, all matter. And within the China equity space, I think to position for continued policy surprises, China internet offers a higher quality exposure to growth. But we also expect rate cuts and capital market support to benefit the SOEs, state-owned enterprises, that are concentrated in high dividend sectors, including utilities, telecoms, energy firms, and financials. And last but not least, we remain cautious on the property developers, but the leading property agency could benefit from the easing policies.
Thank you for keeping us informed on this very fluid situation occurring in China, speaking to the economic implications and sharing with our listeners and our clients guidance when it comes to positioning as well. So we'll definitely keep in touch as this story continues to evolve. Thank you again, Shane Chen, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.